Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on about 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, January the 17th. Welcoming your thoughts and questions about the work being done in the first 100 hours by the 110th Congress, the Democrats' 100-hour agenda. We will talk with a critic of what Congress is up to, what members are doing and not doing. Many of you might be pleased with new legislation that's passed, like hiking the minimum wage or expanding federal funding for stem cell research and other issues on the 100-hour agenda. But our guest isn't. He says the Democrats' 100-hour agenda is 100 hours down the drain. We wonder if you want to agree with him or take issue with him. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Brian Doherty. He is senior editor of Reason Magazine. His recent piece, 100 Hours Down the Drain, is available online at reason.com. Brian Doherty is also the author of the forthcoming book, Radicals for Capitalism, A Free-Willing History of the Modern American Libertarian Movement. And he joins us by telephone way over on the West Coast in Los Angeles. Thank you for getting up early with us.
I'm very pleased to do it, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, your book is out next month.
Yes, indeed.
And your magazine also has a libertarian point of view, does it not?
Yes, it does. It approaches politics and culture from the standpoint that you know what's best for your life, not necessarily the government.
Yeah, limited government, free market stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we'll hit on the different agenda items point by point, but let me start with this. It's not necessarily that the 100 hours are down the drain. It's just that you don't like the legislation that has been passed.
It's true that I don't like the legislation that has been passed, but the reason why I expressed it in those stark terms of down the drain is the one big issue that the Democrats have not adequately addressed, which is the one big issue that most people agree is the reason that they won back control of the House and Senate this year, which is the war, or last year rather, which is the war in Iraq. A CBS poll right at the beginning of the year showed that 45% of Americans wanted and expected action on Iraq to be their top priority. The next priority was jobs and the economy, which 6% said was number one. So overwhelmingly, Iraq, action on Iraq, not just talk, is what the American people and me hope to see from the Democrats, and we've seen very little on that. As long as Pelosi sticks to what she said late last year, which is that despite all the criticism and advice they might give Bush about the surge and other items, as long as they are not willing to take the congressional power of the purse, the one actual weapon they have against Bush continuing his rather nutty plans in Iraq, they're really doing nothing at all, because we've all been talking about how Bush needs to stop. They have the power to stop him, and they're afraid to use it. So Iraq, the dog that didn't bark in the first 100 hours, is the main reason I say that those first 100 hours have gone down the drain, though I do have specific objections to the things the Democrats have chosen to do with their time.
Yeah, you're right. It was more talk than action, but saying that he's not going to have a blank check, there were some congressional oversight hearings going on when it's not the surge. They're calling it something else. The augmentation was discussed. So isn't that some action?
Yeah, no, but he will have a blank check. When she says he won't have a blank check, she quite literally doesn't mean it, because she and Harry Reid have both explicitly said that they are not going to punish the troops, as they put it, by cutting funding. It seems that their political strategy is let Bush have all the rope he needs to hang himself, and then they can continue running against his failed Iraqi policy in 2008, which might be good for them politically, but it's bad for the country and it's bad for the troops who are continuing to throw away their lives on a cause that I think most people other than George Bush and his cronies have realized isn't working. So if she really meant they're not going to give him a blank check, by which meaning they're going to be willing to stand up and say, we're not going to fund this war any longer if you're going to continue to go against the expressed wish not only of Congress but of the American people, until they're really willing to do that, and they haven't been so far, I would say they're betraying their mandate, essentially, because their mandate really was about Iraq far more than it was about things like student loans or stem cell research.
Our guest is Brian Doherty. He is senior editor of Reason Magazine. We're talking about his recent piece that's posted on Reason.com, 100 Hours Down the Drain. He says that the Democrats' 100 Hours agenda really isn't worth much, that a lot of these items being passed are small change tossed to the faithful. And he says that it's a shame that the Democrats aren't doing anything about the country's number one priority, that being the war in Iraq. 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your thoughts and questions. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 17 minutes past 7 o'clock right now. We're talking with Brian Doherty. He is senior editor at Reason Magazine. He is also the author of the forthcoming book, Radicals for Capitalism, A Freewheeling History of the Modern American Libertarian Movement. We're talking about his criticism of the new Congress and the 100-hour agenda, which he says is 100 hours down the drain. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. If you have a thought or question for him, the line's filling up fast, Brian Doherty, with people who want to talk with you about this. But let's tick through a couple of these items. The ethics reform stuff, you write, deserves at least a half-hearted cheer. Why do you say that?
Mainly because I love anything that makes life for congressmen a little more difficult. But and cutting off gifts and free meals and free travel is good for that. But what I think the real key to why lobbyists have their death grip on Congress isn't necessarily about gifts and meals. I mean, I don't actually believe most congressmen are consciously criminals who are really seeing themselves as, oh, I'll do whatever you want if you fly me someplace. The real problem is that lobbyists control the access to the information and persuasion that most congressmen receive. I mean, I actually, to me, these reforms almost seem to have built into them that very cynical notion that congressmen do what lobbyists want them to do because, they're being given $51 worth of gifts. And I don't think that's the case. I think it's just sort of the culture of Washington where all these people hear all day is, you need to do this, you need to spend money on this, you need to do me a favor. Doing me a favor is really doing America a favor. And that's the real problem. And as for the earmark identification, where when congressmen stick in these little special gifts for their district into bills, having them be identified, it's great. Certainly, I'm a reporter, and it makes my life easier if things like that are explicit public knowledge. But the whole theory about why congressmen do things like that is, bringing home the bacon for their district is supposed to help them in elections. So in a sense, this is really just helping them by saying, okay, we'll make it easier for your constituents to be aware that you've done the special gift for your district. It doesn't actually seem to be something that should scare the pork-minded politician. To the extent it does anything, it actually should probably help them.
Yeah. I would think that you would like the pay-as-you-go stuff.
I do. I love the language that I read in House Resolution 6 on the rules. They sound really great. My fear is that until we see how they actually end up operating over the course of the next 5 or 10 years, they really sound too good to be true, because during most of the 90s and up until 2002, Congress also was operating under a similar set of rules, which were supposed to state that if if we're spending more here, we're either going to spend less there or raise taxes to make up for the money. And if we don't do this, automatic rules are going to come in that sequester that money. But the problem is it never happened in the 90s. Not a single sequestration took place, as I quote in my story, during its previous 12 years at law. Congress would pass laws that explicitly forbade the Office of Management and Budget from actually enforcing it. And it also kept the two biggest problems with the federal budget in the future, Social Security and Medicare spending, which are sort of on automatic pilot, were kept out of it. So I need to see going down the line that they're actually going to seriously do what that PAYGO language says, and that Social Security and Medicare have to be included, because those are the two real budget busters down the line that are going to bankrupt the country if we don't change the way they operate.
Then you go on that the rest of the Democratic agenda is small change tossed to the faithful. You it sounds like you think that stem cell funding bill was a mistake. Was stupid.
I do actually believe it was a mistake, but more importantly, it was irrelevant, because stem cell funding actually already had bipartisan support even before the Democrats ran Congress. The problem is it was the one issue in his entire life as president that George Bush was actually willing to veto over. The only veto he's ever given was on stem cell funding. So we can be pretty sure that he'll probably veto it again. So all the Democrats have really gotten out of it is they've shown their constituency, okay, we're not like these Republicans. We're not enthralled to the religious right the way George Bush does. But even if you believe in stem cell funding, you're probably not going to end up seeing it actually happen. And I think Pelosi understands this. It's more political grandstanding because Bush is probably going to stop them from doing it. It appears to be the one thing he really believes in as a politician.
Yeah, and the Congress doesn't have enough votes to override, and they knew that.
Probably not. I would not bet $1 million on this, but I would bet $100.
Yeah. Well, you did think the minimum wage hike was stupid.
Yeah, I approach this stuff from a libertarian view, and my understanding of economics and most economists' understanding of economics tells us that if you make something more expensive, that is hiring an entry-level worker, in the long run, you're going to end up seeing people spending less on it, in other words, hiring less entry-level workers. Hardly anyone ends up working at the minimum wage forever or even for a very long time, and hardly anyone is a sole supporter of a family with a minimum wage. So the statistics you'll see about how, oh, it's impossible to support a family or to live in the long run on the minimum wage, that's probably true, but hardly anyone is. But what you're doing by raising the minimum wage is you're cutting off the opportunity for a certain unknown number of people to get that first entry-level job that's going to lead them to a better paying job. So in the long run, while Congress paints the minimum wage as something that helps the least well-off, by cutting them off from the opportunity to work at all, I think in the long run it actually hurts them.
All right, let's take some calls. Linda in Monroe is first. Hi, Linda, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Mr. Doherty.
Good morning.
Now, when I listen to Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and then President George Bush, there's no comparison. I think we need a woman president, either her or Senator Hillary Clinton. Now, so here's some of the reasons. Now, with 35,000 paid lobbyists down there in Washington, we definitely need some form of ethics rules, and I think that's a start. Now, getting the prescription drugs legally from Canada would be another great thing. Now, the Democrats got 80 Republicans in the House to go along with them on that issue, and on top of that, they banned smoking in the Speaker's lobby just off the House floor. They can smoke in their office or outside. Now, the Republicans should have done...
Linda, so you'd like what the 100-hour agenda. We're kind of focusing in on that.
Yes, and I think the Republicans could have done this, and they didn't.
Yeah, so there, Brian Doherty.
Sure. I agree on the ethics reform. Bringing up that the Republicans didn't do it really is the key. And this is bipartisanship at its best. It's when... I don't think bipartisanship works best when both parties work together to actually do things. I think it works best when their opposition to each other put puts them in conflict with each other. I think the main reason the Democrats passed the ethics reform is not so much that they were dying to do it, you know, because they're congressmen as well, and it's going to stymie their lives, but it gives them a weapon to use against their Republican opponent. So that's bipartisanship at its best, when they're actually at each other's throats.
You don't like what they want to do with prescription drug payments, the negotiating for a lower price.
Yeah, my fear in the long run is if the government, obviously the government has gotten itself in the business of being a huge consumer of drugs, so it only seems to make sense that they should attempt to use some market bargaining power, and I think that really shows the problem with how big a presence government has become in the drug market, because if the government manages to negotiate the drug companies down to a sort of a bare minimum level of profit, a lot of economic analysis, which is a bit too complicated to go into, but whose conclusions seem to make sense, show that they'll have less money down the line to invest in newer, more innovative, life-saving drugs down the line. So my fear in the long run is that program, while it may save government money on Medicare and Medicaid in the short term, is going to create a less healthy market, less healthy innovation in drugs in the long term. And American drug industry innovation is really pretty much holding the whole world up at this point. It's America is where you see most innovation and most new products, not in Europe, not in the countries that already have this sort of negotiated socialized medicine.
Yeah. Speaking of health, Nancy Pelosi did stop Congress people from smoking in some lobby area. What do you think of that?
I would say that falls under the category I mentioned earlier as things I support, because it makes life a little harder for congressmen, no. Which I always think is a good idea. I don't have any huge thoughts on that issue. If I imagine as the world becomes more and more of a non-smoking place, people are less and less used to something that, you know, you and I, I'm sure, both remember a time when almost anywhere you go, there'd be people smoking. And I can't say I miss it. I'm not a smoker, and I don't enjoy the smell of smoke on me, though I do question whether we want to do these things by laws from above, as opposed to just people working out their own standards of what they want to do on their own property. But if it's her property now, in a sense, she's the Speaker of the House and she wants to set those rules, fine with me.
Yeah, we're gonna concentrate in our next half hour on what they're not doing that you're upset about, and that's dealing with the purse strings with the troops in Iraq. But is there anything else that's on this 100-hour agenda that gets your goat that's going to be taken up by the Democrats?
The student loan thing, like the minimum wage, is something that seems like it might be helping people in the short term. What they're trying to do is for needs, a certain set of needs-based federal loans are going to be cutting the interest rate on it in half in slow increments over 5 years. In the end, it's pretty much going to amount to about the price of a new CD every month in people's interest payments. So it's not really a huge amount of help. And again, what I fear it's going to do in the long term by increasing the amount of subsidized loans entering the education market, it's just actually going to raise the price of college tuition down the line, which we've already seen happen. The more cheap money that floods into something, especially something like college, where the supply of it is relatively fixed, it's not easy to launch a new federally approved college. What you see down the line is higher tuition, which leads for more calls down the line for more cheap subsidized loans. It's just sort of a machine that never stops.
We'll check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll get to more calls for Brian Doherty, senior editor at Reason Magazine. We're talking about his piece, 100 Hours Down the Drain, criticizing the Democrats' 100-hour agenda, what is being done and what isn't. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 7:36 on this Wednesday, January the 17th, and we are talking about what's being accomplished and what's not being accomplished in the first 100 hours of the 110th Congress. Our guest this hour is not a fan of what Congress is up to. He wrote a piece entitled 100 Hours Down the Drain. He is Brian Doherty, senior editor of Reason Magazine, author of the forthcoming book, Radicals for Capitalism, A Freewheeling History of the Modern American Libertarian Movement. His piece, The First 100 Hours Down the Drain, is posted on Reason.com. He says the Democrats' 100 hours agenda really isn't worth all that much. He says that a lot of this is small change tossed to the faithful, including stem cell research, the minimum wage hike, and other issues. Meanwhile, he laments that the Democrats won't do anything about the war in Iraq, or aren't doing anything about the war in Iraq and the funding of the war, apart from a lot of bluster and talk. We wonder what you think, what questions you have, whether you agree or disagree with our guest. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. And we'll go back to the phones, and George in Brooklyn is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, folks. I disagree with Mr. Doherty's position that the Democrat Party has, or Democratic Party has betrayed the voters who put them in to end the war. President Bush has stated on several occasions that he expects this war to go into the next presidency, and most people agree that the funding for the next nine months is already done, and that it'll be very difficult, if not impossible, to sort out the difference between weapon systems and so on, so that it'll be almost impossible to stop him. That's true, but let's look at it from the other point of view. He has thrown down the gauntlet now, and his hope is that the Democrats will buy the war by cutting off funding, or attempting to, and hoping that in the process they will so disenfranchise their base that the Republicans will be able to put up a candidate saying that if Bush was successful, he's a great man, and if he's unsuccessful, it's because the Democrats cut off the funding. I would like Mr. Doherty to comment on that and perhaps show me where I am in error.
Me too. Brian Doherty?
It's absolutely true that Bush has created a remarkably difficult political situation for the Democrats. Politically, I understand why the Democrats are afraid to actually do something firm and serious like cutting off funding, because of the situation in Iraq coming in to the 2008 elections is ugly and horrible, which it will be. I mean, I don't think anyone believes that America beginning a withdrawal from Iraq is going to make things great in Iraq. The real question is, there's nothing we can do at this point to make things great in Iraq, and we're throwing away our own money and our own lives on it. So the strategy that I think the Democrats have taken, and I understand it politically, though I think it's the wrong thing to do, is they're letting it be Bush's war. Okay, you started this. You keep up with it. We're going to be on record as saying we don't agree. We think this is the wrong idea, but we're not going to stop you. And then in 2008, they can run on the issue of, look at what a mess Bush has created in Iraq. Whereas if the Democrats cut off funding, then the Republicans can look at the mess in Iraq and blame it on the Democrats. So, I think you're absolutely correct that it's understandable and politically difficult for the Democrats to do something to stop Bush's war, but I think it's the right thing to do, and I think it's what the American people actually expected of them by all the poll numbers about how unhappy we are with what's going on in Iraq, and the 45% who I mentioned earlier who thought and expected that Iraq would be the Democrats' first and most important priority.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, could I make one more additional comment?
Sure. Yes.
The idea of having a continuation of a international aggressive neocon imperialist aggression that I think that we performed in this war, at least the Iraqi part of it, I would not want to continue. And I am willing to, as in opposition to the war, to sacrifice the men who and women who might be saved in the short run to make sure that we can end the war in 2009. Would you like to respond to that?
Ending the war in 2009 would be nice if the war is still going on in 2009, but I think it's more important both for the lives of the American troops over there now and the Iraqis who are being blown up every day to a large degree because a foreign invader is there who the insurgency is fighting against. It's more important to end it as soon as possible. And I think in the long run, the Democrats would be doing a great thing for future American foreign policy to show that the president does not have a blank check. The president just can't get the ball rolling on a horrible policy, and then Congress is going to roll over and go, okay, you're the commander-in-chief. It's your horrible policy. You go for it. Congress needs to remember they're the part of government closest to the people. They need to be responsive to the people, and they need to be responsible for their own power of the purse and not just lay back and go, okay, it's up to you, President Bush, because the American people no longer want it to be up to President Bush, but unfortunately we don't have a chance to show that at the ballot box for another couple of years.
Thank you, George. Next we go to Bob in Lake Tomahawk. Hello, Bob.
Hi, I'd just like to ask the gentleman, sounds like to me like you would cut and run then, pull us out of Iraq right away today.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, I just want to know what you would do about Iraq.
There you go. As I said, a horrible mess has been created. And one of the problems when you create a horrible mess is there is no great solution. There's no solution that we can go, oh, everything will be all right if we do this. Everything's not going to be all right. But we can figure out what's going to be best for America, for the American military, for America's future in the world. And I think cutting and running, if you want to call it that, hey, that's fine. What I call it is returning to sanity and a respect for American interests in not throwing our lives and money away on a policy that isn't working.
Yeah, the Democrats are afraid of having that label put on them.
Right.
And rightly so, though, if don't you think? I mean, that would happen.
Yeah, I understand mm-hmm. their political fear. I just wish they'd have more political courage.
Yeah. Realistically, though, if Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, now granted he's not in the House, he's a U.S. senator, did state during one of those hearings, it's time that we defund this war. And so some in Congress are saying that.
Yeah, some have. Pelosi and Reid, unfortunately, aren't among them. I will say that almost day by day, I'm getting more hopeful about the Democrats on the Iraq issue. While I've been unsatisfied so far, certain signs, including their verbal reaction to the surge, Barack Obama's statements about it and his presidential announcement, mm-hmm. are leading me to hope that the Democrats are going to get more gumption and more nerve and less fear on the Iraq issue. And I hope so. I wish them luck and I wish them courage to do what the American people want them to do, which is to stop Bush's war.
Yeah. What do you think of Barack Obama announcing yesterday that he's got this exploratory committee? He is the only candidate, the only Democrat, who was against this war from the beginning, though he wasn't in Congress at the time.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's a great thing that to the extent that he becomes the public voice and the standard bearer for Democratic Party positions on the war, that's going to be a great thing.
Yeah, I think Hillary Clinton's going to have a news conference talking about what she wants to do about Iraq. Maybe that's Thursday. Do you know about that?
I know pretty much exactly that much about it. She too, while she was bad about it on the beginning, has she's no political fool, and she sees the writing on the wall, and she understands the American people are not happy with the way the war has gone. So I think it's very likely that her rhetoric on the war is also going to start leaning more towards the anti-war side, especially since she's not going to want Obama to be able to outflank her on the anti-war side. So that's another reason why I think his announcement is good. It's going to pressure anyone else in the Democratic presidential game to try to be at least as anti-war as him, if not more.
Brian Doherty, our guest, senior editor of Reason magazine. He wrote a piece for Reason. It's posted on the Reason website, reason.com, entitled 100 Hours Down the Drain, where he criticizes the Democrats' 100-hour agenda. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking about the 100-hour agenda of the 110th Congress. During this hour, talking with Brian Doherty, senior editor at Reason Magazine, who doesn't like much of what the Democrats or the Democrat-controlled House, at least, is passing in its first 100 hours, including the stem cell research bill and the minimum wage hike and other things. And we'll take another call. John in Schofield. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if Brian could tell me if the Democrats passed a law cutting off funding for the Iraq War, could the president add one of these signings that he's done so many times that says it isn't going to really apply to him or to this instance?
I imagine Bush would try to do something like that. The way that money is allocated between the legislative and executive branches is an extremely complicated thing. But if they were to be very explicit in what they are saying they're allowing funding for, and Bush were to violate that, I think we're talking about a pure impeachment offense. And I'd like to think that if they're brave enough to do the cutting off of funding, they'd be brave enough to hold Bush to account, because the power of the purse is meant to be Congress's power, because they're the body of government that's closest to the people. We get to reelect them every 2 years. We only get to elect the president every 4, and they need to stand up for themselves, not just for what's going on right now, but for the whole principle of the separation of powers down the line. Congress cannot continue to be the president's lapdog on this.
Thank you, John. Another John in Fountain City. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to ask your guest what he would think about if the Democrats were able to go on all the talking head show, so to speak, and really put out the message that we're going to act on what the people said in the last election. And we know that when the next presidential election rolls around, that the Republicans are going to use this against us. But we're going to do it anyway because it's the right thing to do, so that they have the message out in front and they can always recall back on their position when they start to be blamed for being weak.
I would cheer them for doing it, and I think that's the only way for them to go. They need to be very explicit that there isn't a happy solution to Iraq now, that once you create a mess like this, there's no tying it up in a nice bow and go, oh, we've solved the situation in Iraq. They're not going to solve it because it's unsolvable, but the only thing we can do going forward is try to do what's going to be best for America's future, for American troops, and that's winding down and pulling out. They need to explain that. They need to explain it. It's not cutting and running or whatever. It is cutting and running, but cutting and running is the right thing to do for this reason, and this reason. And, yeah, get it all out there preemptively so the debate can already be over by the time the 2008 elections come, and people will understand that what's wrong in Iraq is not the Democrats' fault, except to the extent that Democratic congressmen voted to give Bush this power in the first place. Mm-hmm. But perhaps, you know, they can make up for that by doing the right thing now.
Yeah. And what do you say to President Bush, who says if we can't withdraw now, we can't cut and run? Because if we would leave now, it would result in, I think he said during his address, unimaginable slaughter in that country. It would be irresponsible to break that country and then just leave it.
Well, it was irresponsible to do what he did in the first place. And I just have to keep falling back on saying, yes, he's created a nightmare, and you can't end the nightmare just by pulling out. But you can't end the nightmare by pouring another 21,000 troops in either. We've committed ourselves in that case to basically attempting to run Iraq from now to eternity, and that's not the kind of country that America is supposed to be. We're not supposed to be the bosses of an overseas empire, and we need to learn that bad things happen when we indulge in these sort of thoughtless military interventions that perhaps will teach us a lesson not to do them again in the future. And it's not like we're going to make Iraq a great place by continuing the policy we've continued, because it's not a great place. A lot of the chaos and violence is a direct result of the fact that a foreign invader is there for them to fight against, and it's just, it's a crazy gambler's mentality. We've been losing, we got to double down until we win, because we got to win. We're not going to win. It's impossible for us to win, and it's best to just face the unpleasant consequences now, and before we've spent more of our money, our lives, and our national integrity in pursuing Bush's mistake.
Donna in Downsville is with us now. Hi, Donna.
Hi. I expect that the president will ignore whatever the Congress says, and I agree with your guest that we need to pull out of Iraq, and that the only way to really stop that process would be to impeach both Bush and Cheney. That would take up the next 2 years, or the following 18 months, or whatever. And I don't think it would succeed, and even if it did, absolutely nothing else the Democrats want done would get done, which may be fine with your guest. He's a libertarian, but it's not going to be fine with me or other Democrats.
Is that fine with you, Brian Doherty?
Yeah, it would be fine with me. I do understand that it probably wouldn't be fine to most of the Democrats' constituency, but I do think we can't evade what the polls have said about what Americans think about Iraq and how important Iraq was to their vote in the first place. And they need to at least put the ball in Bush's court on this, not just critique, but permit, but to actually try to not permit him to do it. I don't think it has to get to impeachment, though. I also think that if Bush chooses to ignore the will of Congress, if it comes to a funding question, he deserves it.
Yeah. Do you think Congress should vote on this resolution for or against the escalation in the troop surge?
Yeah, it's a nice gesture, though. Again, it's merely a resolution, and without it being tied to an explicit willingness to cut off funding, it doesn't mean a lot. But it would certainly be nice to get it more on the record that the representatives of the American people are not behind this move on Bush's part.
Next, we'll go to Diane in Milwaukee. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I think the Democrats should put all their efforts into keeping the House and the Senate. Let the Republicans have the presidency in 08 because they started the war. They gave no oversight to the president during this whole 12 years. It's going to be 12 years. And, 8 years. And I think they should be responsible for it, and we should put our efforts into other parts.
No, I don't get you. You think there should be a Republican president in 2008 and that somehow the country would be better off that way?
Yes, if you had a Democratic House and Senate.
Yeah.
To provide oversight to what they're going to do, because they're the ones who allowed this to happen.
Yeah.
They should have it on their responsibility to end it.
Yeah, what do you think of that idea, Brian Doherty?
Well, I enjoy divided government for some of the reasons we talked about earlier, is it actually puts the two parties in opposition to each other, and it sort of slows down some of the stupider things that government can do. But politically, it's going to be a tricky thing for the Democrats to pull off, because who ends up winning the presidency often drives a lot of who ends up winning a certain specific House and Senate seats, the whole coattail thing. So it would be very difficult to pursue that option as a conscious policy on the Democrats' part. Though I do think in the long run it's actually better for the American people when there is that kind of divided government, because it prevents one party from sort of being able to run roughshod and get its way unchecked, which is what we saw with the Republicans for the last 6 years, and it didn't work out very well.
Thanks, Diane. One more call. Bill in Dodgeville. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good morning. Got a question. In theory, what if this move by Bush did actually work? Would the Democratic Party end up kind of eating their words with a public flip-flop. I just wondering if this totally did work and the violence tamed down, Iraq, blah, 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 stable government, all this good stuff, what would the public do?
Yeah, I think hit the nail on the head. If it did, yeah, then Bush would suddenly seem like an extremely wise statesman and a great commander-in-chief. But the problem is he also thought his initial plan would work. It didn't for some really obvious reasons. And I think for the same obvious reasons, this isn't going to work either. There are tensions and anger both within the people in Iraq and directed against the foreign invader by the people in Iraq that just aren't going to stop.
Yeah. We have less than a minute to go, Brian Doherty. I wanted to ask you about a trendsetter guest that we had on the program a while back who said that he thought 08 was the year for a third party, you know, for the third party, a third party in Wisconsin, in the country, and that now the time has finally come to have maybe even a candidate for president. What do you think?
Boy, I certainly hope so. I mean, of course, we already have a couple of somewhat healthy third parties, the Greens and the Libertarians. The American people, for whatever reason, have not seen fit to embrace them. But perhaps the ongoing disaster in Iraq and the Democrats' continuing inability to do anything about it will make 2008 a better year for other options, and I certainly hope so.
Yeah, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Doherty, senior editor, Reason Magazine, author of the forthcoming book, Radicals for Capitalism, a freewheeling history of the modern American libertarian movement, which will be out next month. His piece, 100 Hours Down the Drain, is posted on Reason.com. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.